TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham and Manny Hill. It's the dead of the NBA offseason, as you know. Nothing has changed since we last talked on Thursday of last week. Nothing will probably change until we talk again on Thursday of this week.
Unless Kyrie Irving, like, randomly decides to make a trade request.
But he can't be traded until December 15th anyways. So, like I said, nothing's going to change. What we're going to dive into today are the 2019-2020 NBA win totals. For next season, what each team is projected to win out in Vegas. We're going to use the over-under total set by Westgate. We have all 30. We're going to start with the Wolves, obviously. They're listed at 34.5 wins for the 2019-20 season. I think that's a very interesting number because I do think I tend to be pessimistic on what the Wolves will be next year in terms of the final product. I'm not necessarily as high on them as this line. I would like the under here. I think that their window is probably somewhere between 28 or 29 and 35 at most, 34, 35. So I think that the 34.5 is really on the high side here. I know that obviously Carl is one of the best players in the league, but for them to get above 35, which they would have to reach for this to hit, I think you're going to need to see a lot out of Andrew Wiggins. I think Jarrett Culver is going to have to be a terrific young player, which is very possible. Mm-hmm. Both those things are very possible. I'm not necessarily confident in Wiggins taking the step that he needs to take in order for that to happen, though.
Yeah, and I wonder, how much does Robert Covington's impact play in this, though, too? I mean, this team was playing so well before he got the injury, and he obviously did not play in the entire calendar year of 2019.
Has not played for Ryan Saunders.
Yeah, and I wonder if maybe they're factoring in with that 34.5, if they're factoring in, okay, well, they figure to get Covington back, and that is maybe a reason for a little bit more optimism that they would have a higher win total. But I don't know because it's hard for me to predict because I don't know what – obviously Covington is a very good player, but I don't know how he's going to fit in with what they do. And, I mean, what type of player is he going to be coming back from this injury too?
So, obviously, last year they won 36 games for the 2018-2019 season. And I think having the over-under only slightly below that is relatively fair, but it's also worth noting how many veterans were on that team that knew how to win at least in some capacity and help them get to that 36-win mark. They don't win 36 games without Derrick Rose, without Taj Gibson, without some of those vets that were around.
Even a nice stretch that they got out of Lou Alding,
yes,
too.
They won games because of Lou Alding in the second half of the season. That's absolutely true, Manny. I don't know that they can get back up to 35. I think that this is going to potentially be a year that is going to, I'm hesitant to say a step back because I think it could be a necessary thing where this is kind of a rebuilding year or a reset year. And then next year you could be looking at a team that's around 500 or maybe even a little bit better. But I think that for them to take that big step forward that we know this organization wants to take, I think a small step back might be something that happens this year.
And I think when you look at the way this roster is built right now, you have to factor in, okay, how is the new playing style going to fit in with this collection of players? Do they have the right collection of players to play the style that they ultimately want to have in place for the next, you know, handful of years, as long as they're trying to build this thing up? Do they have the right personnel for that right now? At least on paper, it doesn't look like they do. And so that's going to be part of it too.
Well, don't think we necessarily know exactly what the style is. The easy comparisons to make it to Houston, but Houston's best player is a guard, and that's right. Entirely different than having your best player be a 7-footer. So I think that there certainly will be similarities with what Houston does, and I think it's going to be a drastic change because the Wolves' offense has essentially been 5 years behind the rest of the NBA for the entirety of the franchise's existence, it feels like. But I think that their offense will be new and improved, but it won't be what Houston is. So I think that they'll have an offense that's kind of set up for their personnel. I just don't know how good their personnel is.
What type of style would you want to see this group based on what is in place? What sort of style of play would you like to see them play? What do you think is the best fit for the style of play for this group?
I think it would be really interesting to see them do something kind of similar to how when they centered the offense around Kevin Love, when Kevin Love was here and really, really good. But you have more three-point shooting, and obviously Carl is more versatile than Kevin Love was. Kevin was probably a better rebounder than Carl is, but Carl's certainly a better offensive player for my money. Very similar in terms of their outside shot, but I think Carl's more versatile. So I think that you can stick him at the elbows in the way that he was a lot and kind of have him facilitate from there. Kevin's probably a little bit better of a passer than Carl has been to this point in his career, but I don't know how good of a passer Kevin was very early on because Carl's only entering
Carl's entering his fifth year.
Yeah. I don't know how good of a passer Kevin was at that point either.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin was coming out of UCLA. He was thought to be a very good passer. At least that was kind of I remember on draft night, you know, Jay Billis was breaking him down and said, yeah, Kevin Love's a really good passer. And, you know, people will be surprised to see how good of a passer he is. But we didn't really see a lot of that. We didn't really see him be utilized in that way the first couple of years with Randy Whitman, and then Kevin McHale took over like halfway through Kevin Love's rookie year, and then they hired and then McHale departed. Khan came in, hired Kurt Rambis, and Kurt Rambis was trying to run the triangle through like Darko Milicic and Corey Brewer, and that was just not
what a time.
Yeah, that was an interesting time. So I don't think we ever really saw Kevin Love's passing ability, at least early in his career, be utilized, and it really wasn't until Rick Adelman came along and sort of implemented his system that's when we started to see a little bit more of some of the same things that we would see in Sacramento. Certainly not the same type of roster, but
yeah, not the same pace.
Yeah, not the same pace, but I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how Carl is used, and I think the ultimate goal though has to be to try and maximize him, right?
And yes, it's just and the question is, they've essentially said that.
Yeah, but the question is just like, are there is there good enough pieces around him to be able to maximize him? He's going to get his numbers. He's going to be a productive player so long as he's healthy. But I just wonder if the right personnel is around him to really maximize what he can do aside from just being the great scorer that he is at that size.
Yeah, that's what we're going to have to find out. But you haven't answered whether or not you like more or less than 34.5 wins for the Wolves.
I actually like right at 34.
So under.
So under, yeah.
So under. That's I think that their ceiling's 34 or 35.
Yeah.
I can't. It's hard, and it's also a little bit difficult. I'm sure we'll revisit this when the schedule comes out in August, so next month, because you don't know how many scheduled losses they're going to have. Like every team has those games where
second night of a back to back.
You're traveling both of them, or your fourth game and fifth nights. Like when you're jumping time zones, teams lose games that on paper it looks like, oh, there's no way, there's no way the Wolves should be losing a game to the Hornets. But when it's the second game of a back-to-back and you were in Milwaukee the night before and then you don't have your best effort in Charlotte, it does happen. Like that's part of the NBA. You're not going to escape a full season like that.
And not to mention, Carl's been a pretty durable player. Andrew's been a pretty durable player, but not everybody's going to play all 82 games.
So I would venture most won't.
Yeah, so you're going to have guys that are going to miss nights and miss games for various different reasons. So that's going to be a challenge. The other part of this, too, is we've talked about this a million times. The Western Conference is just a gauntlet, man.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next. The Wolves are listed in terms of just their total. They are 12th in the West at 34.5. Behind them, the OKC Thunder at 31, the Phoenix Suns at 29.5, and the Memphis Grizzlies at 26.5.
Oklahoma City at 31.5.
I mean, when you
life comes at you fast.
Yeah, it certainly does. But you know what? I think that they've done a good job with what they've gotten back for those guys that they traded in terms of picks. But yeah, the Wolves are listed at 12th in the West. The ahead of them,
Sacramento.
Yeah, Sacramento. Hang on, I lost it here. Sacramento is 37.5. Dallas, 39.5. The Pelicans are at 39. Blazers, 45.5. Spurs 46.5. Warriors are at 48.5.
Life comes at you fast.
Lakers 49.5. Nuggets 52.5. Rockets 54.5. Clippers 54.5. And Jazz 54.5. Do any of those stick out to you?
The Jazz. So the Jazz are number one at 54.5.
There's a three-way tie at 54.5 in the West with the Clippers, Jazz, Rockets.
That's kind of that kind of stands out to me. Mainly, I mean, and if anything, it's exciting because it's like, I don't think there really is a clear-cut favorite now.
No, there certainly, I don't think there is in the NBA at all. Where we've had, since at least the 2016 season, maybe even, you could make the argument since the 2010 season, that this is the first time where you don't know who either team that's going to be playing in the finals is. Because in the 2014-15 season, you could have said, oh, Golden State kind of didn't necessarily come out of nowhere. They were good, but everyone assumed that LeBron and the Cavs were going to the finals. Mm-hmm. Like you thought, oh, the Cavs are going to the finals. They got LeBron, Kyrie, and oh, they just traded for Kevin Love too.
Yep.
Where since that year, you've been able to say Golden State's going to be in the finals. Mm-hmm. And before LeBron went to LA, you said it's going to be Warriors, Cavs. Like that's the finals. You knew that on October 15th when the season started. But this is the first time in a long time that I don't know either of these teams. I'm not sure which. I don't know if it's going to be Milwaukee or Philadelphia in the East, because I think either one of those teams could theoretically win the conference. If I had to pick today, I would probably pick Philadelphia, and I actually really like their over for their win total. It's at 55.5. I think that Philadelphia is going to win the most games in the NBA next season.
The best record.
I think they win 60 plus, but in the West, it's hard for me to even make a pick.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of seems like whoever ends up with the number one seed in the West will end up with like 54 or 55 games because the conference is so deep that everybody is going to kind of beat up on each other. And there's not going to be one clear-cut Golden State type of team that's going to end up with 60 to 65 wins because they're just so much better than everybody else. And I'm actually really excited for that. It's kind of refreshing. We haven't seen that in the league for a long time. And it, you know, locally it's kind of a bummer because the Wolves don't figure to be in that conversation.
No, certainly
which,
not.
You know, is the disappointing part because when you go back to when they sort of started this original rebuild with Flip, you would have hoped that if they had,
this was kind of supposed
this
to
was
be going to
be the time where they were going to be. Everything was going to come together for them, and then they were going to be sort of in
and that they were on a really good timeline too.
Yeah,
they were on a really good timeline, regardless of what happened in Golden State with. I mean, Durant wasn't there when this rebuild really started,
right?
And even if Klay doesn't get hurt, Golden State's is just naturally getting older at this point. Like they are on the back nine of their run. There's no question about that. So you kind of timed it up perfectly. It just, Andrew Wiggins didn't pan out. I think that you made an ill-advised trade for Jimmy Butler, costing you Zach LaVine. And although Chris Dunn hasn't been that good, Lauri Markkanen would have been a great fit here.
You also could have taken Jamal Murray instead of Chris Dunn too.
Also true, yeah. But the timeline and the thinking was really smart when it happened. Yeah. It just they haven't executed it nearly as well as they needed to.
Yeah, and a lot of times along the way you got to get lucky too. You need some things to go your way.
Sure.
I mean, even when you look at the rise of the Golden State Warriors, they got lucky by not having to pay Steph Curry a huge.
They got lucky.
Contract.
Steph got hurt.
Yeah, they got lucky that he had those ankle problems and that they could give him a deal that wasn't going to break their bank. And
they got lucky that a second round pick turned into a future Hall of Famer. That doesn't happen often. That's what Draymond Green is. Draymond Green turned into a future Hall of Famer after being picked 35th overall.
Yeah. And I think with the Wolves, if this new era under Gerson Rosas is going to work, they're going to need some of those same sort of things to happen their way too. They need somebody, you know, one of these guys that they've picked up this offseason. It would help if one of those guys exceeds expectations.
Absolutely.
Jake Layman, a Jordan Bell, somebody like that, anybody that they brought in, it would help tremendously if one of those guys ends up being better than we could have even imagined.
Some of those are interesting to me because what if they get too good? What if Jordan Bell is too well? You don't have his bird rights, and he hits the free agent market again next year. Jake Lehman's locked up 3 years, $11.5 million. That's pretty solid. Like, you want him to obviously be great.
Yep.
But if Jordan Bell's awesome, he just kind of used you to revitalize his career, and now someone else can pay him, and you might not be able to, or you have to use your cap space next year, your mid-level exception, or whatever it is, to try and keep Jordan Bell around.
Yeah, and the other thing too is, they really need Jarrett Culver, I think, to turn into a star.
Yeah, certainly
and,
do.
And I don't know one way or the other. It's so hard to predict with, unless you get a Zion or, you know, a Blake Griffin, a LeBron, a Kevin Durant type, that where you just know that they're going to turn into a star player because of, you could just see it. Jarrett Culver, I don't know. I mean, there's aspects of his game that are intriguing that I like. But also, I just don't know. And when you're kind of picking outside of that top three range, you're really, if you're looking for a superstar, a guy, or at least an all-star type of player, you're really just hoping. And you're trying to do your due diligence to develop the guy. And that's what the Wolves need to do right now with Jarrett Culver. And they need him to turn into a guy that's going to go to a few all-star games at least. And to be that second fiddle for Karl Anthony Towns, because obviously Andrew Wiggins is not going to be that.
Yeah.
And they need Jarrett Culver to pick up some of that slack. And it's tough to put those expectations on this kid right away like
that. But
they're
there.
That's the reality.
It's time to play, man. You're in the NBA. It's time to play. Another one of these over-unders that's really interesting to me is the Pelicans. They're at 39. They're obviously one of the youngest teams in the league. They've got a really, really exciting young core of guys. I'm not necessarily high on the Lakers guys they got, but I like a lot of the other moves they made. I think 39 is a little high for my liking.
For the Pelicans?
I think I would like the under there.
Yeah, because I don't know. To your point with the Lakers guys, they haven't really... There's talent there, but they haven't really shown that like they can win with that talent.
I'm not a Lonzo Ball believer.
Yeah.
I think that shooting is too much of a necessity in today's game, and he can't do it. And he doesn't.
His free throws, man.
Well, not even that. It's he can't finish at the rim either. Mm-hmm. When you're a 6'6" guard, 6'7" guard, whatever he's listed at or whatever he actually is, he's a tall guard. He's a very tall guard. You have to be able to finish at the rim, and he can't. Like, his numbers in finishing at the rim are somewhat similar to Isaiah Thomas's, and Isaiah Thomas is 5'7".
Mm-hmm.
Like, it shouldn't be the case for someone that has almost a foot on him. But that's what Lonzo Ball has been. He's a good defender. He's a very, very, very talented passer.
Mm-hmm.
But until he can shoot, until he can find a way to put the ball in the hole at the rim, I'm going to be skeptical of him. Brandon Ingram, I think that shoulder is going to be a question mark still. And I don't know how good he necessarily is. This is going to be a big time prove it year for him. I do like Josh Hart. I think Josh Hart's a quality player. He's not as talented as the other two, but he wasn't ever supposed to be. I think he can be a quality role player in the league though. But I like a lot of the team. 39 seems a little high for a team that's going to be centered around Zion Williamson.
J.J. Redick, I think, will be a lot of fun there, though.
Certainly will, yeah.
Playing
and
with Zion
I think,
Williamson and opening up some space for Zion on the inside, too.
I think that because they're a little younger and a little bit longer, maybe, and they're certainly better defensively than Philadelphia was. And Philadelphia was terrific defensively, with Embiid being one of the best defenders in the league. I think that Drew Holiday being a great – they're going to have such a good defensive backcourt with Lonzo and with Drew Holiday.
I'm a big Drew Holiday
fan. I think that you could play those three together – you could use – that's a very true three-guard lineup.
Would you put Zion at the five? Do you think they'll put him at the five?
At times, yeah. Amount? Certainly, yeah. I think that you could hide some of JJ's defensive inefficiencies, and that could help him because that he got played off the floor at times last year in Philadelphia.
Who is the eight – who would be the eight seed in the West based off the –
let me count
over under. It seems like the 8 seed is going to be like it's going to be another one of those like 46-47 win teams because this conference
eight
is so
seed,
deep.
The 8 seed according to Westgate is the Portland Trailblazers at 45.5. So a team that just went to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
The Blazers in last season won 53 games. They did have quite a bit of roster turnover, and a couple other sports books have them higher. I know DraftKings has lines out too. The ones we've been using for this conversation have been Westgate Casino.
Yeah.
DraftKings has lines. They have the Blazers at 47.5, which is two wins higher. But that's a really high number for an 8 seed.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the West is shaping up to be the team at the top. The number one seed is going to win maybe 55, 56 games. And then the 8 seed is going to finish like 8 or 9 games back.
And
like, it's going to be really jumbled up.
Just for reference, the Eastern Conference, the number 8 team is the Orlando Magic at 41.5 wins. So there's a pretty big difference there.
Could you see Orlando winning 41 games?
Sure. I can see him winning 41 games. The Blazers have a higher total than the 8, 7, and 6 seed in the East, according to these totals.
So they've got Philadelphia at the top.
No, they have Milwaukee 58.5.
58.5.
Philadelphia at 2. Boston at 3. The Raptors and Pacers tied at 4. So 4 and 5. The Nets are 6th. The Heat are 7th. The Magic are 8th.
How good do you think the Raptors will be?
I think that they'll be... I'm not confident that they're not going to sell off at the deadline. Mm-hmm. I think they could make... They are a playoff team. They have the talent to be a playoff team. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they sell off because they're not a title-contending team.
Mm-hmm. And you got a lot of guys on the last year of their deal.
You just won, yes. Kyle Lowry's on the last year of his deal. Serge Ibaka.
Marc Gasol.
And those guys will have value to somebody. And I think that the value there might be worth more than trying to get to the second round of the playoffs and losing again. Like, you did that for so long if you're Toronto. Mm-hmm. You finally won a title. You're not going to repeat. Give these guys that victory lap of the first half of the season and see where you're at. And if something goes crazy, maybe you add. But the team right now is not a title contending team. And maybe it's worth trying to hit a soft reset here and see if you can be good and give it 2 years and see how good Pascal Siakam is.
So you feel like the East is going to be kind of a two-team race?
I think it's a two-team race. I don't think Boston has the firepower to get it done. They'll be a team that I love their over. They're 49.5 for their total. I love their over because Brad Stevens has shown me some things throughout his NBA coaching career. I don't think he's good at managing superstars. I think that we saw that with Kyrie Irving. If you are a superstar that needs to be managed a certain way, I don't think Brad Stevens is the guy for the job. What I don't necessarily believe in Brad Stevens as this all-time great playoff coach that a lot of people want to paint him out to be. What I do see Brad Stevens as is someone who absolutely gets the most out of everyone. That is, when a team has their backs against the wall, when his team is counted out, when his team is the underdog, he gets the most out of them. The year they got the one seed in the East, when this was the 2016-17 season, so the year after the Cavs won, the Cavs just kind of screwed around all season long. They ended up winning like 54 games, but the Celtics won 56 or something like that.
And that was probably the best Cavs team of
that run.
LeBron's return.
The last year with Kyrie Irving, that was the best Cavs team. That was when Isaiah Thomas, I think, finished 5th in the MVP race. He was an All-NBA player. He was terrific. And they made it to the conference finals through sheer will. They wanted it more than everybody. And I think Brad Stevens and his coaching philosophies and the way he did things was a big reason as to why. But when it becomes time to put up or shut up, they're down by 50 in the conference finals at home. They didn't have the talent.
Was that game 2?
That was game 2. They got obliterated in both games 1 and game 2. Game 3, they won in Cleveland. LeBron only had like 11 points. He was sick.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't play that well. Game 4, the Celtics were up by like 10 points almost the entire game, and Kyrie Irving kind of rescued the Cavs. And then in Game 5, they smoked Boston in Boston.
And that was like peak good J.R. Smith with the Cavs, too, during that run.
No. J.R. was better in 2016. 2017 16? was – he broke his thumb early in the season against Milwaukee, and his daughter was born a couple months premature, so he was really away from the team for most of the part. After he broke his thumb, he was really never the same, and I think that the situation with his daughter really affected him, and rightfully so. Like, that's way bigger than basketball. I think that affected his play, too, a little bit. But, I mean, that team had, coming off the bench, they had Kyle Korver. Obviously, they had LeBron, Love, Kyrie, JR was a starter. Tristan Thompson started, too. They had Kyle Korver coming off the bench, Deron Williams after Dallas bought him out.
That's right, yeah.
They had Derek Williams. That team was unbelievably loaded. They had I know Dante Jones had the 15th roster spot, just the honorary roster spot. But that Cavs team was really unbelievable.
And they just ran into the first year of Kevin Durant with the Warriors.
That Cavs team, they won 51 games. They win a title in 95% of NBA seasons all time, maybe even higher than that. They had Channing Frye. Mm-hmm. They had Richard Jefferson. Larry Sanders was around for a little bit.
That's
Andrew Bogut played 51 seconds with them. That team was loaded. Amon Shumpert was still seeing time for them. They were really good that year.
Wow, amazing. So, all right. Well, yeah.
those are some of the win totals. I'm sure we'll do this again once the schedule comes out and it becomes a little easier to forecast, but there certainly will be some other ones that'll stick out. Be sure to find our podcast available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the all-new Score North app. Completely 100% free, but that might be for a limited time. So you might want to download that app right now, because there's no promising it's going to be free forever, man.
It's free.
Exactly. Get it while it's free, guys. I implore you to do so. That's Manny Hill. I'm Danny Cunningham. Check us out on scorenorth.com or everywhere I just said. We'll talk to you next time.